I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the state of bicycling in central Indiana. We'll talk about what's been accomplished in recent years and what work still needs to be done. My guests are Connie Szabo-Schmucker, Advocacy Director of the Bicycle Garage of Indianapolis, Joshua Tharp, Pacers Bike Share Manager, and Damon Richards, Executive Director of Bike Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are going to be talking today about the state of bicycling in central Indiana. We're going to talk about what's been accomplished in recent years and what work still needs to be done to make this a more bike-friendly part of the world. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Connie Szabo-Schmucker, Advocacy Director of Bicycle Garage Indy, Joshua Tharp, Pacers Bike Share Manager, and Damon Richards, Executive Director of Bike Indianapolis. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. So we probably ought to talk because this is a, you know, if we were magically able to do this show, you know, 20 years ago, I think we all, and then project it forward, people who would be listening would realize, oh, this is a much different landscape. I mean, in terms of biking, some significant steps forward have been made. Could we talk about where things are right now and what some of the most important steps toward getting us to this point were? I want to hear everybody's thoughts, but I'm going to start with Connie.
Well, 20 years ago, there wasn't the network of bike lanes that we have now, actually even 10 years ago. 20 years ago, there, I think the Monon Trail and Fall Creek Trail were the only greenways. The Cultural Trail wasn't even on the horizon at all. So a lot really has changed in the city as far as more infrastructure, and you're seeing more and more people biking because of it.
Joshua, your thoughts?
The general tone of cycling in the United States has changed greatly. It has gone from being an amusement to something that's a viable means of transportation. The development of the bike share, obviously that's my perspective, is huge for us. It gives us the ability to reach out to folks who may not have a bicycle and they can still have a biking opportunity. In general, I second Connie, the trails, the bike lanes, Mayor Ballard's push for all of that development has moved us forward tremendously. And that just increases awareness, which is truly the thing.
Damon.
Yeah, well, they've kind of said it. I remember 20 years ago, we still had the old city bike lanes, city bike routes that were numbered, and they had little signs all over the city. And if you were lucky enough, you could actually follow one from one place to another if nobody had taken a sign. And that was about it. And those of us who were biking on the streets 20 years ago kind of knew we were not expected to be out there. Mm-hmm. Not that we weren't allowed to or we weren't supposed to, but we weren't expected to be. And that's a big change. Today, everyone has the expectation of seeing bike riders on the streets because there are a lot more as a result of the changes that have happened in the last 20 years.
And I want to talk about that. I think Joshua made the point that there's been a change in mindset, that biking has stopped being perceived as something that you do either for recreation or amusement or physical fitness, but it's actually a way that people now, a significant slice, figure, okay, this is a good way to get from point A to point B and maybe from point B to C to D to E to F all the way through the alphabet. What produced those changes? I'm going to start with Joshua, but that's a significant cultural shift.
I see it coming from some of the larger urban areas. We have kind of an overflow where you have density issues and transportation issues. There's, and especially in an urban area like Indianapolis, where there's a lack of transit options. Maybe not a lack, but it's not universally accepted for everyone to have some sort of transportation. Buses don't go as many places as they do, say, in New York or Chicago. We don't have subway. We don't have transportation like that. So it really gives a person the opportunity to have a means to get from point A to point B without relying on anyone else, so long as your bike works.
When did people start thinking of the bike, though, that way, rather than as, at some level as a device for amusement?
Biking starts to get thought of as a transportation option during oil crises. Mm-hmm. As the cost of gas climbs, people start looking for other ways because for a lot of people, the cost of transportation is a significant part of their overall budget. And so finding ways to reduce that when the cost goes up leads people to start looking at alternate transportation. Can I take the bus to get where I want to go? Can I ride my bike there? Can I walk there? And for a lot of people, they're driven there for cost reasons, but they stay because of the joy. It is literally impossible to be sad while you're riding a bike.
Mm-hmm. Connie.
I think connectivity has really helped, at least on the north side where a lot of the bike lanes are connecting to the greenways. And just in a microcosm in my neighborhood, I see more and more people riding because there is now a connection. Fall Creek Trail has been extended towards Fort Harrison State Park. And so now they have a way to get to Fort Harrison State Park that they didn't before. And that not only increases the Fall Creek Trail usage, it increases the people in the neighborhoods close to there. Now they can ride their bike through their neighborhoods to the Fall Creek Trail to Fort Harrison State Park. That's just one instance. But the more you have connectivity, the more people can see, oh, well, I can get from point A to point B easily by bike, whereas before they may not have seen that.
Is this primarily an urban phenomenon, Damon?
It starts there, but it is not primarily an urban phenomenon. People are realizing that a lot of the trips they take aren't very long. Even if, when you live in a suburban area, a lot of your trips aren't very long. So if the facilities are available for you to take your bicycle, they do. And typically it starts out as recreational trips. Unfortunately, Hoosiers getting fit aren't motivated that way. But it spreads, getting people to get out for that first ride. Even if it's down to the corner store or the neighborhood strip mall, if you're suburban, just start something that grows.
Joshua, though, do you need a fair amount of population density to make programs like a bike share work?
It doesn't have to be density so much as safe places to be.
Mm-hmm.
We know studies have been done all around the country and around the world that a person needs a safe, the perception of a safe place to be while on a bicycle to feel comfortable riding a bicycle. So that's the number one. Obviously, density helps in desire. You're going to have more people wanting to do it and driving for it, but it's not required. The safety is really the issue.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the state and status of bicycling here in central Indiana. We're going to be talking about not just what's been accomplished in recent years, but also the work that still needs to be done. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Kind of part of the reason I'm asking this as an urban thing is, you know, in a different life, an earlier life, pre-kids, I was a triathlete. And I remember on Saturdays, and I lived for a lot of years in the far north side of Indianapolis, And I remember Saturdays and Sundays were always our long training rides. And it felt like, okay, you had to worry about traffic a little bit, but pretty much once you got north of 106th, you were just dealing with cornfields and farm, and it was wide open country. Now pretty much you got to get all the way up to northern Michigan to get out of traffic. So at one level, has this been one hand giveth and the other hand taketh away? Because I can't imagine that doing those long training rides now would be anywhere near as peaceful and satisfying an experience as they were when I was doing them.
Well, it's interesting you would say that. And because where I live, it used to take us maybe 4 or 5 miles to get out the country. Now it's, 8 to 10 miles before we're in country. But I've also found my husband and I can do a ride of 30 to 40 miles in length in the area that we live, not going more than 8 miles from our house, and we totally enjoy it. We have the Fall Creek Trail. We have Fort Harrison State Park. We have neighborhood roads that we go on, and we just circle around and do all sorts of different loops, and really, we're in the trees. It's quiet. Farm fields on a day like today or a day like what we're going to have tomorrow, when you don't have a lot of trees, they're not as enjoyable as being in amongst the trees. I lead a ride on Thursday nights called Evening Cruise from Bicycle Garage Indy, and we start from our North Store and we go out to Fort Harrison State Park, or we go to Fall Creek Parkway, and we just have a social recreational ride of about 20 miles, and we're on quiet neighborhood roads, and there is a lot of riding if you know where to look for it. And I can talk a little bit more about that as well.
Okay, Damon. Yeah.
That's a principal difference, John. You were not out for the pleasure of riding. You were out to train.
Well, I enjoyed it. I mean,
you can't not enjoy it.
And it was a way of blowing off steam and all of that high-stress work.
For someone who wants to have a training ride, urban riding is difficult because you've got stoplights and stop signs and all that stuff that keeps breaking your pace, breaking your cadence. But a vast majority of the new riders are not fitness riders. Mm-hmm. They're riding for transportation, either by choice or by requirement. But their riding isn't interrupted by those breaks. In fact, some of them look forward to that next stoplight where they can catch their breath and
get a drink
take
of
a
water
drink
without having to balance.
So it's there's a difference, because when I ride to go out for that long fitness ride, I go look for the country roads. But most of my riding is on city streets, and I'm stopping at the stoplights and stopping at the stop signs and dealing with all the other traffic that's on the street.
In truth, you're greatly overestimating my skill level, but that's a whole other story. Joshua, you were leaning in.
Particularly from the downtown perspective and the family-oriented, just everyday rider perspective, we're seeing a lot more of those folks out there. Mm. And city streets and trails are what people are using to get around. I myself use the bike paths and neighborhood streets, which the city is about to come out with a program called the Neighborhood Greenways Project. And we're going to see some of those highlighted to illustrate those connections between the trails and between the bike lanes, so that you can get from point A to point B using safe ways that aren't necessarily requiring millions of dollars in development, even though we have wonderful facilities like the Cultural Trail and the greenways.
And I don't want to belabor it, but since we've talked about gains and all of that, I don't want to necessarily. Is there anything that has been lost along the way with the gains we have seen so far, do you think? And you're laughing.
I laugh because nostalgically, I loved those old bike route signs, and I liken it to Route 66. Mm-hmm. Route 66 was never a road.
It
was
a really quick way to get anywhere, but
true.
That's a whole other story.
But it was a concept. So almost with every change in administration, there was some government bureaucrat who rerouted Route 66 onto different roads. And the old bike route system was done that way. It was just like, we're going to put up signs that will get you from this point to that point. And I missed those because they were opportunities for people to just get out and explore the city with sort of a self-guided tour. And we have less of that, but we're getting better at it as we put together more maps. And as the network becomes more connected, people can build their own.
If you are just joining us and would like to share your own bike stories or raise some bike-related questions about the status of bicycling here in central Indiana, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Connie Szabo-Schmucker, Advocacy Director, Bicycle Garage Indy, Joshua Tharp, Pacers Bike Share Manager, and Damon Richards, Executive Director of Bike Indianapolis. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the state and status of bicycling in central Indiana, particularly about, you know, we've been talking a lot about what's been accomplished and the cultural shift that has occurred in the past 10, 15, 20 years. We're going to look at also what work still needs to be done. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Connie Szabo-Schmucker, Advocacy Director for Bicycle Garage Indy, Joshua Tharp, Pacers Bike Share Manager, and Damon Richards, Executive Director of Bike Indianapolis. We've gotten a couple of email questions, and again, if you want to join this conversation via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. This one comes from a listener named Topher. He says, on neighborhood streets, I routinely see large groups of cyclists blow through stop signs without slowing down, regardless of cars that are at the intersection or pedestrians waiting to pass. With bicycle use increasing, how do your guests propose to improve the citizenship of bicyclists on the street? We'll start with that one, Joshua.
I think education is key in general with cycling and bicycling. Getting programs into schools, getting programs into community centers, and public outreach education programs, we're just not seeing enough of them. That, to me, is a big area where we're starting to see some advocacy, but it's definitely a gap in our biking culture that there's not really enough education, even for people who are old hat at cycling. They still need to be re-educated and understand what the modern expectations and laws are. And you find a lot of people just don't even know what the laws are around cycling. Mm-hmm. And so that education piece is somewhat missing in the local culture.
Connie and Damon, I want to hear your thoughts too, but to some degree, we probably should point out that most of the rules that apply to cars also apply to bicycles when you are riding on the street, correct?
Correct. When it all also is the responsibility of the ride leader when you're riding with a large group to set the expectations of how that group is going to interact with the traffic that exists on the ride, not only for their safety, but for the safety of the other road users.
Damon.
This is a huge issue for Bike Indianapolis. And here's the deal. We all learned to ride a bike in kind of the same way. Someone close to us held onto the seat and ran down a sidewalk and they let go. And then you were a bike rider. Mm-hmm. And very few of us got any education beyond that. So for a bike rider to know how to interact on the roads with other vehicles and pedestrians is something most people learn by happenstance. Mm-hmm. And here in central Indiana, we've done a very terrible job of providing good rider education. And Bike Indianapolis is working on several initiatives to bring better education to bike riders and in partnership with BGI to motorists about sharing the road and how to ride on the streets and get along with one another.
gotten a similar email from a listener named Hillary. And again, if you want to send us an email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. She says, as a driver, I am comfortable with bikers on the road. Unfortunately, I've noticed many bikers do not follow the rules of the road, such as not using hand turn signals or stopping at stop signs or lights. Are there classes bikers take before biking on main roads to increase safety? Damon, I'll start with you since you were talking about that that's an initiative.
Right now, it is very difficult for a bike rider to find a bicycle safety class. Most of the bicycle safety instruction that happens in central Indiana is targeted at little kids, teaching them kind of basic maneuverability of a bicycle. The League of American Bicyclists has training that is proven effective. The American Bicycle Education Association has training that is proven effective. We just don't have that instruction provided enough in central Indiana. It's a big initiative, and you'll see a lot more of it next year. No cycling training is required. There's nothing mandatory before you get on your bike and go out on the streets. You don't have to take a test. You don't have to get a license. But an interesting fact about violating the laws, motorists violate the laws about at an equal rate to cyclists. It's just that when you're in a car, you don't notice those people running the red lights or going 10 miles over the speed limit with you. And you can easily notice a bike rider doing something.
Well, and part of it is that bicycling is also, at some level, a social activity. You know, as you talked about, Connie, with yours, you generally don't see huge packs of cars moving through an intersection, you know, in close formation.
Maybe not stop signs, but you do have stoplights.
Right. Yeah.
So... one of the things that I wanted to mention about education is I'm a league cycling instructor from the League of American Bicyclists, and I can teach the Traffic Skills 101 class. I often don't get that many requests for that. What I am getting, and especially this year, are requests for parents for me to teach their kids how to ride a bike. And for adults, I've taught at least 6 or 7 adults who have never ridden a bike before. And I've taught people how to ride bikes for like the last 10 or 11 years. But this year especially, I mean, this week alone, I have 8 people I'm teaching how to ride bikes. And I've taught at least 7 adults so far this year. And it's not a norm anymore that everybody learns how to ride a bike. And... So we've actually lost several generations of people who grew up learning how to ride a bike. And so having the education piece, it's also having people want to be able to do that and have that experience as a child that also then ultimately will become adult bicyclists and hopefully then want to learn a little bit more about how to ride safely when they're interacting with traffic.
Joshua, is this something, though, as more and more people are riding bikes, and particularly as they're doing it in areas where there's likely to be a lot of traffic, you know, in urban and more densely populated areas, is this something we need to look at, maybe mandating some safety classes? I mean, are we going to look at the days where you have to have a license to ride a bicycle or anything like that?
It's been thought of and talked about. I certainly have been asked the question before. I'm not sure that we're going to have the density in Indianapolis anytime in the near future to require such a mandate. I don't think it's a terrible idea, but it there's a lot of regulation that goes around it and enforcement as well. I don't really see it happening. Bikes don't have the same weight as a car on the streets. I do think that there should be school courses that, like when I was a kid, we had school cycling education program. This was, 20 years ago.
Only yesterday.
And I think, right, but... that's been lost. Yeah. As my children grow up, I don't see that at all in their schools or any of their programming.
Damon, you were smiling.
We don't think that bicycle education should be mandated, with the possible exception of it would be a wonderful alternative sentencing option for bike riders who get pulled over for traffic violations, as opposed to paying a fine or doing some community service, make them go take a class. But we do believe that the classes should be offered, and a lot of people ask about those classes. And I think that as people start to ride, many of them come to realize they don't know the things they need to know to feel safe riding on the streets. And we believe at Bike Indianapolis that if we provide that opportunity, people will come and get the training.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Ryan. And again, if you want to join the conversation, track us down on Twitter. You can find us at WFYI. Ryan writes, "What about cycling in Franklin Township? How do we get bike lanes?" All right. Everybody's chuckling. I'll go Damon first. But
yeah, I have great sympathy for the people on the south side of Indianapolis. The bike riders down there are brave. There's some historical precedence to all that, but the bike planning that is going on now and the new bike plans are greatly increasing what will be available to people on the south side of the city and make it easier for them to ride around on the south side as well as to get into downtown and to the north side. It is in planning.
We've gotten another tweet. Again, you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI from a listener named Gretchen. And Gretchen does the flip side of the education and traffic thing. She writes, "I don't bike as often as I would like, partially because drivers in the downtown and near north side area drive so fast and with no respect for bike lanes. Why is the speed limit 35 miles per hour and not 20 in these places? Also, please don't use the bike lane for parking or early turn lane." That's the other side of the coin, right, Connie?
Yeah, that is the other side. And that's actually why we're partnering with Bike Indianapolis on the Bicycle Friendly Drivers Program that we're going to launch later this year. We're really excited about that. That would be an opportunity to teach motorists about how to interact better with bicycling. That's one of the things that we also see as our business. We have customers who come in. One of the first questions they have when they've bought their bike or bring their bike in, where are the places that I can ride? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the number one question. We're trying to address that, you know, locally, but also through a national initiative called, right now it's called Black River, but it will be rebranded under People for Bikes as Ride Guide, and it will have curated routes and a bunch of different fun things, which it's not launched yet, so I can't really give you all the details about it. But we're doing, you know, some of that of, you know, educating people on places where they might feel safe to ride, as well as the more, you know, time and time again, the more bicyclists that are out there and the more interaction that motorists have with bicyclists, the more that both of them are know to expect each other and how to interact better.
Go ahead, Damon.
John, the single greatest thing that could be done to make cycling in the city safer would be better enforcement of speed limits and red lights. Unfortunately, the state of Indiana doesn't allow automated speed enforcement, so we can't use cameras to capture drivers who are speeding or running red lights. But speed kills, all the data shows it. Even the National Highway Transportation Administration admits it now. So for every 5 miles an hour slower a car goes, the chances that a bike rider will survive a collision with that car go up tremendously. And so, yeah, she's right. Managing speed would make riding safer for everybody.
Well, go ahead, Joshua.
Reaching out to your city county councilors and requesting such things as lower speed limits and traffic calming measures, such as bump outs, which literally make people drive more slowly, as on 10th Street, East 10th Street. Making those requests and being adamant about them, and as many people as can reach out to those counselors as possible, is the best way.
Hear, hear.
We have gotten an email from a listener named Bruce. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Bruce writes, go ahead, just try it. From Irvington East, there are lethal stretches on either side of the pavement. Up on the narrow, narrow sidewalks are in the grass, weeds, and glass. I like to ride out to Target or other shopping, but not die trying. There's no good way to ride east of Franklin. The official map of bike routes, Indy Ride Guide Volume 2.0, shows stretches of streets with no shoulders and heavy traffic. The guide labels some streets most bikeable or merely bikeable and give warning of least bikeable. That's both helpful and frustrating. I go from driveway to driveway as allowed by sympathetic drivers. Riding north from Washington to 10th, the marked bike route is up Arlington. I ride the nice residential parallels to save my skin as well as enjoying a scenic ride. Why put bike lanes along busy, even dangerous streets when quiet residential streets are nearby? By the way, I obey all laws, including the one requiring a bell. People love the bell. Oh, please educate Hoosier drivers not to swoop so close to cyclists that their side mirrors nearly swipe my helmet. I'm going to reframe some of this, Bruce, and just ask, because it sounds like there are a lot of frustrations there. What are the biggest frustrations that the dedicated bike riders here in Indianapolis are experiencing or contending with now? I'll start with Connie on that one.
Well, I think one of the things that he mentioned was the motorists passing too closely. In 2009, there was a city ordinance that requires motorists to give 3 feet of passing clearance when they're passing a bicyclist. And that's all well and good. However, most motorists don't know that that exists. There wasn't a public information campaign about it, but there is a 3 foot passing clearance. Also, there is now, in the last 3 years, IMPD has been doing a bicycle safety enforcement campaign where they are targeting motorists and bicyclists. And this year, for the first time, they actually have a device that measures how close the motorist goes to the bicyclist. So if it's closer than 3 foot, the motorist will be pulled over when they're doing their campaign. So there's some exciting things happening to try and address some of those issues.
Damon.
To get to the issue of why are there bike lanes on busy streets when there are nice, quiet neighborhood streets, part of the update to the bicycle plan is to identify those nice, quiet streets. But the reason that bike lanes are on those major roads is because that's where you need them. I don't need a bike lane on a nice, quiet street because I don't have high-speed traffic to deal with. What we need are better-built bike lanes so that when you're on a street with a bike lane, you feel comfortable and safe riding on it. And our Department of Public Works works very hard to try to plan better bike lanes as we go along. But we still don't have a minimum standard for what makes a bike lane in Indianapolis.
Joshua, wasn't the Cultural Trail at some level an attempt to also solve that problem, to create a space that was dedicated to bike riders?
Absolutely. And we've seen it wildly successful downtown.
Well, you wouldn't be here without it, right?
Exactly. Definitely would not. Right, that the Bike Share is a program of the Indianapolis Cultural Trail. It's our means of getting people out on it and safely riding from place to place downtown. It does. It creates a safe place to connect, make those connections between things. You know, our hope for the city is to grow the bike plan and the neighborhood greenways to create those connections where the cultural trail cannot go. And it doesn't make sense for bike lanes to be, but where there need to be connections to address those safety issues.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the state of bicycling here in central Indiana. We're talking about what's been done, what still needs to be done. If you want to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Connie Szabo-Schmucker, Advocacy Director of Bicycle Garage Indy, Joshua Tharp, Pacers Bike Share Manager, and Damon Richards, Executive Director of Bike Indianapolis. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the state of bicycling in central Indiana, about what's been accomplished in recent years and the work that still needs to be done. My guests are Connie Szabo-Schmucker, Advocacy Director of Bicycle Garage Indy, Joshua Tharp, Pacers Bike Share Manager, and Damon Richards, Executive Director of Bike Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so several ways. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can do what a listener named Mark has done, and track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Mark writes, I once lived in Davis, California, very bike-friendly, but they also enforced laws. I actually received a ticket for doing 25 in a 15 zone. How can Indy enforce the rules of the road and educate riders, drivers better? Damon.
Well, the greatest thing to do there would be to get our state legislature to allow automated speed enforcement. The city of Indianapolis spends 92% of its budget on public safety, which means finding the resources to enforce some of these rules is not in the foreseeable future. Using modern technology to do some of that would be a big help. And again, education. A lot of people violate laws because they don't know those laws exist. Like the 3-foot passing law. If nobody knows it's a law, they feel like, well, I didn't hit him, so that must have been okay.
Well, and it's odd because that pulls up a memory. I remember we used to do train when in my triathlon days out at Eagle Creek Park an awful lot. And there actually was some tension between the people who were running and the people who were bicycling because often on some of those downhills, the bikes, if you were really hammering, you could get up somewhere around 40 miles an hour. And, if you weren't watching what you were doing and looking for the pedestrians, that could be life-threatening for somebody. And I do remember seeing, I think it was a park ranger pull a pack of bicyclists over. I think in that case it was just warning tickets, but they were being warned. And told that they had to clean it up a little bit. Is this something that, we really have to drive home with cyclists too? Is that, yes, even though it's not as heavy a vehicle as a car, and I might add, probably doesn't apply just to bicycles, but people who are riding scooters or, any of the new devices to get around, as we become, much more versatile in all of this, that the rules still apply, that's not a dispensation. Joshua, you're nodding your head.
Absolutely. People need to know what the limits are. They need to be aware of laws. And like Damon was saying earlier, most people get on a bike as children and just ride off without any real guidance. I think a small piece maybe, but something that is significant is education of law enforcement as well, to bring awareness, if nothing else, awareness to the need to police people on bikes.
Absolutely.
To be fair to everyone using the road, like cyclists need to be held accountable just as much as anybody in a car.
Yeah, like look over your left shoulder before you drift out of the bike lane, even if there is someone parked in the middle of it or whatever. Don't assume that there are no cars there or anything like that. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about biking today. You can do what a listener named Andrew has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Andrew, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I believe I was just speaking to somebody about these bike paths, they're more of like community builders. So if you have a infrastructural need of like these pathways and bike routes, you build community, which in the end results in a better democratic process. Once you have these communities and these people who are traveling with each other, because in a way a road is a highway in a community, a small community, you need that pathway for the interaction between the individuals who live nearby each other, and having those pathways go towards like community centers, whether it's like a school or a library, like for kids to ride to after work, or like you know, the football fields that don't, that aren't used after school activities and everything. What if we built these bike routes and pathways in outer township areas to get these kids to these local areas to communicate with each other, growing up, being able to be a part of the democratic process of, like, what happens in my community? Like, do I want this Walmart to pop up right down the road from me? Mm-hmm. And I really think that's where it comes down to these bike routes, building better communities by building a better infrastructure necessarily.
Thanks very much for the call, Andrew. Joshua.
So the Indianapolis Cultural Trail is a prime example of exactly what you're saying. It was conceived of and designed and implements connection between the cultural centers of Indianapolis. We're seeing all over the country, but in our region, developments like that in places like Carmel, Noblesville, Fishers, Plainfield, Brownsburg, all over, where people are recognizing and requesting and wanting these pathways to be connected on a cycling and pedestrian friendly way. It's increasing, and it is part of how we create community within the cycling world, but also it creates a more humanistic community because you're out there sharing the same bodily space with people. You can see their eyes and, yeah, and you communicate with other people out there. It's a magical thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Damon.
My summary of that is life looks different at 12 miles an hour. You see so much more of your community. You get to interact with your neighbors, whether they're riding or out mowing the lawn or whatever. And those are things that you don't get if you come down the street in your car and hit the button for your garage to go up and pull in and you're gone. It creates great community. And just in my neighborhood, I've met many of my neighbors because they've seen me ride up and down the street. And now I'm trying to get them to ride up and down the street with me, but they're reluctant.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Ben. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, I like seeing more options for Hoosiers to be healthy and see the expanding bike trail systems as a positive for the metro area. Prior, I lived in Broad Ripple and wasn't upset when we lost an auto lane of traffic west of Keystone on 62nd for expanded bike traffic. I casually use the Monon Trail, and I use the various prescribed routes in Hamilton County, where I now live. Your guests speak of their use of trails and neighborhood side streets when they go out. I daily drive Hazel Dell from 96th and up to Cicero. There is a bike and run trail running parallel the same length. My family uses it to bike on the weekends. Often we are biking off the road on the trail and see two abreast riders doing their best Greg LeMond impersonation, chatting as they sip from their bottles, while a chain of angry cars pile up behind. I think it is a bit disingenuous to hear a guest suggest an adult riding a $1,000 bike is not aware of the traffic. After all, these people most likely have auto-driving licenses. How do pro-biking and trail advocates expect the general public to get behind use of taxpayer money or expansion of trails when cyclists act cavalier and often don't even utilize the trails running right along the busy roadway? Damon, I'll let you have that one first.
This is a really challenging area because, as we talked about earlier, cyclists need to be respectful of those people who are moving at a slower rate, pedestrians and scooters and segways and all that stuff. And realistically, bike trails are not designed for somebody who's moving at 20 miles an hour or more. Mm-hmm. And so while it may seem that those riders are being rude, they're actually being very respectful because they shouldn't be on that trail if they're imitating Greg LeMond. They should be out on the street.
Now, in fairness, they shouldn't be riding two abreast either.
Legally, we can ride two abreast.
But if you're, you know, in theory, if you're driving, if you're moving along 10 miles below the speed limit, you should make way for the car to pass, right?
The point I make to people is, if instead of that being two bike riders in front of you moving slowly, if it were an Amish guy with his buggy, would your emotional response be the same? because the reality is you'll have an opportunity to pass, and perhaps those riders should get over. Maybe there's a place. Maybe there's not. Not being there in that moment, don't know why they didn't move over. But the emotional response to a bike rider in the street is so dramatically different than the emotional response to any other slow-moving vehicle.
Okay, well, and Connie, I guess I'll ask you to jump in here because I know you teach this sort of stuff, but at least, and I should say in addition to my triathlon days, I did a fair amount of bike touring, and one of the things we were taught was if it's traffic, you move to single file right away. You drop back.
Well, if you have a large group, let's say you have 10 bicyclists, if they all move to single file, it is now very, very difficult for the motorist to pass them, whereas that they are, and when I have a large group on my evening cruise, what I try and do is have six people, so the cars can pass in a leapfrog fashion. Because if you have everybody all string out, if you have 20 people and they're all single file, it's going to be impossible for a motorist to pass. Whereas if they have four or six at a time, have a big gap, so the motorist can leapfrog through them when it is safe to pass, they will be able to get through much quicker, and it'll be a safer pass.
Go ahead, Joshua.
I'd just like to point out, too, that these trails that we're talking about, greenways, cultural trail, these are shared-use, mixed-use pathways. Mm-hmm. They are not specific to bicyclists. So even though they don't have speed limits technically, although some communities like Carmel have instituted a speed limit on the Monon, they don't have speed limits. However, it is really inappropriate to have that level of speed happening where a person might be walking their dog or with their children. We have to be cognizant of the fact that they are mixed use.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Jimbo. And again, if you want to track us down on Twitter, you can do so at NoLimitsWFYI. Or at WFYI, excuse me. Jimbo writes, how do you promote bicycle safety for riders? What equipment is recommended? I see so many bicyclists without helmets. Does Bike Indianapolis promote helmets? I've seen some of their members not wearing one. Damon, since you've been invoked there.
We Bike Indianapolis encourages riders to wear a helmet. And again, this comes down to an issue of do what you need to do so that you feel safe riding. So if a helmet makes you feel safer, ride one. Helmets are not required. Helmets aren't even required for motorcyclists in Indiana. Helmets are not required. Mm-hmm. And there's debate even within the cycling industry about the effectiveness of helmets, and that can go on forever. But we encourage people to ride. When we do organized rides, a helmet is required in that organized ride. But I would much rather have someone riding without a helmet than not riding at all.
Mm-hmm. Connie.
When we have customers come in, often they're asking, do we have any high-vis clothing or vests so they can make themselves more visible to other road users? And we also then say, well, why do you want this high-vis clothing? And they say, so I can be more visible. And we also tell them about lighting. There are now daytime running lights. That's a new thing in the last couple of years, where there are specific lights that have a irregular flash pattern, and they are bright enough to be seen in daytime, as far away as half mile to, I think, almost a mile away, rear lights and front lights. And so that, you know, that will help them be more visible to the motorists who are coming behind, so the motorists have more opportunity to safely pass them and safely see them.
We're talking about the state of bicycling here in central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Bruce has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yes, John. Thanks for this segment.
Certainly.
I ride from Mapleton Fall Creek down to Mass Ave, and I was always taught to get in my lane and maintain my lane, not to weave in and out. And when I have, you know, five cars parked in the parking spots on the right, and then there's an opening of four or five, people will nearly run me over and honk their horn at me because I won't get over. But that causes me then to be weaving in and out of traffic because now I've got to merge back into that traffic. And I've just always been taught that you get in your lane and you maintain it. The second thing was down on the cultural trail, there are signs that says bikers next to the road in this lane and walkers on the other side. That's not honored very much at all. I've constantly come up behind walkers who, and I can ring my bell and ring my bell, and they just don't pay attention. They won't move over. And the other common, if any of you all remember this, when I was a kid, we used to have public service announcements, and they would be right after a television program would go off. They would come on before a commercial, and it might say, you know, did you know, just like bikers have right of way in this area or that area, or it was just any kind of public safety announcement, and then it would say who it's paid for. And I've not seen those in years. I don't know who paid for them or if that's something, because a lot of bikers are going to be listening to this program, but it's the people that come up behind us and honk may not be listening, and how do we get through to them?
Well, they're the ones who have the radios, though, when they're moving around, Bruce. But, yeah, yeah. But thank you. You make good points. You make good points. Thank you very much for the call. Joshua, I'll start with you on that one.
I, again, think that education and public outreach, like you're suggesting, is the way forward. Getting the message to people in ways that they'll hear it and see it. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, YouTube advertisements and things like that that people will see while they're just living their lives. That is a very effective means of communicating with people. But I reiterate, getting into schools, helping children to understand what is right is a fantastic way for the next generation.
Connie.
Well, I totally agree with the caller when he was saying he shouldn't be weaving in and out of parked cars. That is exactly right. You shouldn't be weaving out in and out because now you have to merge into the very same traffic you were weaving out of. And that when you're a cyclist on the road, you need to be very predictable. And if you're weaving in and out of parked cars, you are no longer predictable. So, you know, education is, you know, is key. Education of motorists and education, which is one of the reasons why, you know, our bicycle friendly driver program is going to be so important. And, you know, also having neighborhood bike rides and community building so that people understand how to ride in a group and how to ride and interact with others in a very positive way.
That'll have to be the last word, I'm afraid. We're out of time. I'd like to thank, well, we're going to have to do this again. We've got a whole phone bank of people calling in to ask questions. I'd like to thank my guests, Connie Szabo-Schmucker, Joshua Tharp, and Damon Richards for what's been an enlightening conversation. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neil Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting station.